Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for this Thursday, March the 7th, starts now. On today's show, Ben welcomes back the no-filter attorney, Adolfo Mondragon. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, if you want to know news, politics, art in the city of Chicago, then head to ChicagoReader.com because you'll get your fill, I promise. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky, head to ChicagoReader.com. /Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A, V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Read Rick Thursday, and here's why. Dear friend Adolfo Mondragon, election lawyer, lawyer in general. Just strike election lawyer out of that one. Lawyer in general, constitutional scholar on deck. We're going to getting ready to take apart the Colorado ruling by the Supremes. You know, I'm obsessed with that, ladies and gentlemen. It says so much about where we are politically in this country. And I don't know, the lack of judicial oversight as Donald Trump heads toward another term in office. But before I do, a little diversion from these horrific thoughts of Donald Trump running the country again. Shout out to Rick Morrissey in today's Chicago Sun-Times sports columnist. And I've always urged listeners, when it comes to reading the newspaper's coverage of the proposal by the Bears and the Sox to take public money to build stadiums that the public didn't even realize like 6 months ago that they were going to be building in Chicago, to read the sports page. Don't read the front page coverage. The front page coverage, by and large, follows the tradition of mainstream journalism in which you promote any economic development program that a rich person wants on the grounds that if a rich person wants it, there'll be a trickle down for the rest of us. So it's good. So that's generally your traditional mainstream coverage in Chicago when it comes to big deals. Like the sports writers have developed a more, maverick viewpoint. They're more likely to be George Carlin-like in their interpretation of these deals than you'll never find a George Carlin type writing like an editorials or columns in the mainstreams. So Rick Morrissey, who is a sports columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times, has been weighing in from time to time, as has Rick Tallender. There's two Ricks. Isn't that something that sometimes it's two sports columnists? Rick, let's pause and think about that, ladies and gentlemen. So he is taking apart this news story that ran in the Sun-Times the other week, where a developer by the name of Kurt Bailey, who is sort of spearheading the 78 development that which would benefit the White Sox, had made an overture to reach out to bring the Bears in on it. And he had to do that, ladies and gentlemen, because the Bears, oh my God, capitalists again, they cut each other off at the knees. Jerry Reinsdorf totally cut off the Bears at the knees when he went to the state house before the Bears did, seeking state hotel motel taxes, essentially, to finance that stadium scheme. So now the Bears are like, hey, what about us? And so now, instead of having the two giant sports entities fighting each other, they're like, come together, let's just get more money from the taxpayers and pay for both of us and bill it as a super bonanza for everybody in the city of Chicago. And here is a quote that this developer Bailey gave to the Sun-Times that ran on the front section okay, of the newspaper without any qualification. So this is the difference between the front section of the newspaper and the sports section. And here's the quote. Quote, wouldn't it be unbelievable for our city if you were to see two amazing facilities for these great sports teams built at once? That's the quote that Kurt Bailey told the Sun-Times, to which Rick Morrissey writes, and I'm quoting Rick Morrissey, Kurt, sweetheart, these aren't two great sports teams. The Bears have forgotten how to win, and the White Sox have an owner so stuck in his way that hydraulics couldn't move him. So a financing partnership to pay for the two new stadiums, I fear it would unleash sinister forces we've never even considered. I love that shout out, pointing out these are not great sports teams. They're utterly horrible. Oh, no. Stop. Before I go even further, and promise I'll ask Adolfo to weigh in on this at the end, because we have more pressing business. Adolfo, first of all, welcome back, young man. Good to see your smiling face.
Thanks, Ben. It's always a pleasure to be here.
You're looking fit as a fiddle. So I, of course, as Adolfo knows, I'm utterly obsessed with this Supreme Court decision. Adolfo's been on the show at least twice to talk about it. Ed Mullins has been on the show to talk about it. Karen Lederer has been on the show to talk about it. Essentially, as I see it, it's a ballot access issue. And essentially, as I see it, there are rules and regulations that govern a candidate's ability to be on the ballot. We know all this. I know all this. Adolfo knows all this because this is the way of the world in Chicago and the state of Illinois. Adolfo, one of his expertise is either fighting to get a candidate on the ballot or fighting to get a candidate off the ballot. As we always point out, Adolfo, you got to go from, if you want to make a living as a ballot access lawyer, you got to be able to do both, correct? You
have to do both. Right.
What's so bizarre and twisted is how sort of like this challenge to Trump to get on the ballot because he's clearly violating the 14th Amendment, Adolfo, it's viewed as like this alienating thing that just came out of space. Like, what, God? The notion that a state or an election board can kick a candidate off for violating the rules. We've never heard of this before. And the Supremes themselves channeled this in their ruling and in their decision. So anyway, this all began when the Supremes announced on Monday that they were siding with Trump and they were throwing out the decision by Colorado to kick him off the ballot. And so he was going to be allowed to be on the ballot, even though he clearly is violating the 14th Amendment prohibition against insurrectionists being on the ballot. One of the arguments, the chief argument they gave that all nine justices agreed on, Adolfo, and I'd love to get you to weigh on this one. We'll start here, is that a state election board can't weigh in on whether a candidate for federal office is on the ballot because that would be too chaotic. I'm like, have they never not been paying attention when Illinois tied Ralph Nader in knots when he wanted to run for president and get his name on the ballot? I mean, state election boards weigh in all the time. And can U.S. Senate candidates be on the ballot? Can presidential third-party candidates be on the ballot? Your thoughts on this general notion that it's somehow too chaotic if a state dives into this issue? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's absurd to think that states don't wield tremendous power already to piecemeal knock national candidates off of the ballot. Like you were saying with Ralph Nader here in Illinois, Madigan hired Casper to do just that twice. I think once they failed, and then the second time that Ralph Nader ran, I think they were successful. So in theory, and I mean, and probably in practice too, it's already a viable road for all of these parties within their states to make a plan of attack and say, you know, we're going to make an effort to knock this presidential candidate off or a Senate candidate off or whoever that's serving in a federal position and do it via a signature challenge or a challenge on any of the minutia or rules that that particular electoral board has in terms of how you file your petition and the manner in which you procure your signatures or whether or not, you know, you signed a particular candidacy paper, like we had the case where Danny Solis didn't sign it, but somebody from his staff signed it, you know, or whether or not they take an oath or they don't take an oath, et cetera. So it's the states already have the power to knock off national candidates, that is presidents and vice presidents, off of a ballot. They've done it before. Illinois did it with Ralph Nader. So this idea that we fear that all of these states can piecemeal do it, they already can. They can do it. So whether it's for a candidate being disqualified because they're an insurrectionist or because they fail to garner the amount of signatures that that particular state requires, it doesn't matter. They already have that power. So this big fear is all bullshit.
You know, and that led me to this question, which I've been thinking about. What if they, here in Illinois, anti-Trump forces had moved to bounce Trump off the ballot because he didn't get the required number of signatures? In other words, to go after him the way Madigan went after Ralph Nader.
Right.
Would the Supreme Court say that's unconstitutional?
No. I don't think so, because the states are... See, so when the federal government... There's this rule in election law that the federal government doesn't interfere with states' garden variety or like their local rules in terms of what they require to go on a candidate. But they can interfere when it, you know, when those rules interfere with like equal protection under the 14th Amendment, or I guess it would be this insurrection clause that they're standing now. But the fact remains that states can formulate their own election rules and they can enforce them. And you could game the system that way if you wanted to, right? I mean, locally here, they game it that way with these signature requirements anyway. Same thing could be said for a presidential candidate. In fact, I sometimes doubt that some of these presidential campaigns even garner, if they went under the scrutiny of a Casper objection, I wonder if they would pass muster, because often, I mean, there's a lot of signatures that they have to gather all over the state. Let's say Illinois, for example. And I don't know if you did a sample challenge of those signatures, if in fact they went through the scrutiny of a Casper objection, if they would pass muster. So I think those presidential candidates get a pass because they're the heads of the big, you know, either the Republican or the Democratic Party. But a guy like Ralph Nader certainly didn't get a pass, right? So if they game the system against a Ralph Nader, there's no, or making a, not game it perhaps, but make an effort to bounce him off the ballot because they have an interest in doing that, they can already do the same thing for Joe Biden and for Trump. And in fact, with Trump's organization, I don't know how strong it is in each state. I probably think that the Illinois ones, they could have just, instead of attacking him on insurrection grounds, they could have just attacked them and hired Casper, who does this all the time, and just grinded the shit out of those signatures and probably bounced them off for those reasons. So it could already be done, you know, and probably easier than this whole fucking, because this thing delayed the process because it had to go through appeals and then ultimately had to go through this bullshit Supreme Court that is so fucking politically activist, it's unbelievable. They could have just said, you know what, fuck that, let's just look at these signatures and bounce this motherfucker off. The problem here is that Illinois wouldn't have mattered because he's not going to win Illinois. But if you do that in a state that matters, right, and you get all your best election law attorneys who know all the ins and outs of the local, you know, the state electoral rules, I'm sure you could bounce, on a good day, you could bounce Trump off. Well, and so the power is already there.
All right. And it wouldn't have really mattered. Colorado wouldn't have mattered anyway.
Right.
Because Biden probably wouldn't Colorado. In fact, my argument to everybody goes, oh, my God, Ben, Alabama's going to Biden off. I'm going, well, first of all, let's see them come up with a compelling case justifying bouncing him off that could survive court scrutiny like the folks did in Colorado. Second, Biden's not going to win Alabama either. Let's just bounce him off. Let's just expose how ridiculous the Electoral College system is and only have five states have the president.
Right, decide the whole thing, right?
Do away with the pretense of democracy. It's so absurd. By the way, just so folks know, the Casper that Adolfo alluded to is Michael Casper, an election lawyer extraordinaire here in the state of Illinois.
The dean of the election law practice, you know, here in Illinois.
Yeah, no, Casper knows his stuff. I say this with grudging admiration because so many times in the early O's, we would be opposite sides of issues. I would be weighing in on how overbearing and the Madigan machine was. But Casper was the election lawyer that worked for the Madigan machine, and they were always knocking off third-party candidates and independent candidates and making life easier for Madigan's caucus members. And, yes, he knows a thing or two, to put it mildly, about election law. And he could have had Donnie Trump tied in knots on the issue of just nominating petitions if they chose to go that way. All right. You raised something to me the other day when we were talking about this. And you said, I'd love for you to riff on this. You said that in the abstract, the Supremes like to present themselves as umpires, just calling balls and strikes. Politics does not weigh in on the matter at all. And John Roberts, the Chief Justice, has said this at the other time. I think Amy Coney Barrett, who the most recent Supreme Court Justice, has said this as well. This ruling is the exact opposite of that. I would argue this is the most political ruling in the world. They wanted it 9-0 to send a message that the Democrats, the Democratic judges and the Republican judges, the liberal judges and the MAGA judges all agreed that it would be too chaotic for our democracy to allow Colorado or Illinois to knock Trump off the ballot. But too chaotic. We need this notion of uniformity, or we'll just lose our collective little minds. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. That's not calling balls and strikes. It's either a ball or a strike. Right. You don't call a ball a strike just because you're worried about the outcome of the game. You just call the ball the strikes. Did Donnie Trump lead an insurrection? That's the number one. They didn't even address that, Adolfo.
Yeah, I mean, and they didn't even ask questions about it during the oral argument how can you deny the truth, right, of the matter, right? Just like these Fox News talk heads or whatever. But you're absolutely right. These Republican Federalist Society, textualist, originalist judges pride themselves on the fact that they're not judicial activists like those activists of the 1960s that brought you Miranda and brought you all of these rules that are not in the Constitution, and they brought you abortion rights and they brought you education rights and all this stuff that's in the penumbras. You know, they say that cynically, right? And yet, I mean, the hypocrisy time and time again is revealed through these decisions where it's already, you know, predetermined what they want the outcome to be, and then they work their way back to give you a decision that justifies it. Here, I mean, Justice Barrett, I'm looking at her one-page dissent, and, you know, she's another one of these, we just call balls and strikes, but at the end of her, in the second paragraph, it says, quote, particularly in this circumstance, writings on the court should turn the national temperature down, not up. It's like, so then you're admitting that you take account of which way the wind is blowing or what the political temperature is in the room in terms of when you decide to go against your own principles. Because I also know another level of hypocrisy is that these conservative justices are very states' rights oriented people. And here they're giving the federal government a trump card over a state that's trying to do things according to the way they, you know, they feel their electoral system should abide by, using the Constitution, obviously, but saying like, look, the Constitution says this, we have election law system, and I think the Constitution is right. We're gonna keep this person off the ballot. But this is one exception. Oh no, in this case, states are too powerful. You know, usually they're the ones like states' rights, fuck the federal government, right? Oh, Civil Rights Act, fuck that. Every state could protect its own citizens. Yeah. You know, Mississippi is gonna do a beautiful job of protecting Black people in America, right? We don't need the federal government. But now here, states, we need to fear them. The federal government is going to do the job and protect them. So another level of fucking hypocrisy. This is an opportunity for them to say, yes, we're going to strike a blow against federalism and we're going to give states their rights back, their right to knock off. I wonder if it was Biden who was on the line here of being, on the ballot. I wonder if this court would have changed its tune and said, no, the states have this right. It's within their providence to knock this motherfucker out, you know? So another, maybe perhaps, you know, we'll never know, but maybe another level of how they take politics into account.
Well, okay. To that point, in their oral arguments, they kept saying that. Two different judges said that. Well, Alabama could kick Biden off. That was their big argument.
Right.
Which I said, let them try.
Right.
I mean, if you have a case to make against Joe Biden, if you have an argument that you want to make about Joe Biden that, I don't know, he violated, he too is an insurrectionist. Okay. What's your evidence? Put your evidence out there. You and I had this long discussion. You have to have... Yeah. It's an evidentiary hearing. You have to present your evidence. You just don't make the claim.
Right. And Colorado did that. And in fact, that's what I thought they would do. They would just say, like, yes, this is a self-executing, executing a provision of the 14th Amendment. Yes, it applies to presidents. Yes, you can kick a president off of a ballot state by state. But then they would have said, but in this case, he wasn't provided his due process in terms of proving that it was insurrection. We have to wait till that trial in D.C. is done. Then you could do that. That's what I thought they would have done. But that would have been, you know, a much more calling balls and strikes type of decision instead of the shit that they gave us, right?
Yeah. That would have been another, in its own way, a wimp out. Because, like I said, and Colorado did put these issues. They did give Trump an attempt to defend himself on right. whether it was an insurrection. So evidence was introduced. So that would have been a cop-out as well in its own way.
But it would have at least been, you know, it would have at least had a, maybe more semblance of a, less political, fairer thing, right? But because it would have been like, oh, well, for due process reasons. But here it's like, oh, we fear what these states are going to do. We fear that another insurrection is going to happen, just like the one that happened January 6th is basically what they're saying.
Yeah. And by the way, that would have forced them to address the issue of was it an insurrection? And they didn't address right. the issue at all, which is really bizarre. All right. So, Then let's go into the sort of this balancing act that the Supreme Court is constantly going through. So we talked about how it was important that they, from their perception, they have a 9-0 decision. So they had to concoct this thing in such a way that the ultimate tossing out of Colorado was 9-0. Even if all 9 judges did not agree on all aspects of the case.
Right.
And they did that through various...
The bargaining, I guess, right? I mean, in the backroom bargaining.
Well, yes. And so we can only speculate as to what was going on in those back rooms. I have a theory, and I would love to hear your theory. I believe that the judges are afraid of MAGA, both physically afraid of them because MAGA threatens people all the time. They threaten judges, they threaten judicial clerks, they threaten juries. They're a scary force, and I also think they're beholden to certain political, but they owe their careers to MAGA. Three of those judges were appointed by Trump. So they have a loyalty to Trump. So right.
And one of them is married to somebody who's like a big proponent of all the MAGA.
One of them, Clarence Thomas, that yeah. one. How is that not recusal? So you weren't going to get from the get-go nine judges. So let me just five judges to ratify Colorado. So let me just ask you the first point before we get to the second point, and that is this: do you agree with me or disagree with me that the judges were intimidated by MAGA?
I kind of do and I kind of don't. It's weird because on the one hand, what Donald Trump does is intimidating. But that intimidation, I would think, would rationally lead them to rule against Trump in this manner. If Trump does what he does and he gets a second term, remember that the only thing that the Supreme Court has no way of enforcing its decisions, right? And throughout history, the big fear is that what happens if a president just says to the Supreme Court, fuck you, I'm not going to do it. And I think there's been like one or two situations where like breaking strikes and stuff like that, where the president's been like, oh, I don't know, I don't want to do that. The court can rule whatever it wants. It can't enforce its rulings, right? Well, what if you get a president who doesn't like a decision by the Supreme Court and says, like, let's say the Supreme Court says, you know what, president, you got to go into Mississippi. What's going on there is like causing race riots and blah, blah, blah. You got to go in there and do this. This is the right thing to do. And the president says, fuck that. I don't want to do it. This is one president who will be, fuck that, I don't care. So you would think that in terms of preserving their independence and their ability to have their decisions mean something and then people abide by it, you would want a president who would want to play by those rules where they respect that. But by giving Donald Trump an opportunity to become president again, even though he doesn't deserve one, like legitimately, you would think that intimidation factor would lead them to decide this case differently. And yet, if their self-interest is to protect themselves against the intimidation factors of Trump, they're doing the exact opposite, because what they should be doing is making sure that this motherfucker doesn't become president again. Because when he does, he's not going to give a shit about what anybody says, the Congress or the Supreme Court, right? So I think they are intimidated, but their reaction is not rational. I would think that a rational actor would be like, this guy is bullying me, so I'm going to maneuver so that this dude is not in a position where he could bully me and do more harm to me. But instead, they're opening the fucking road for this guy to go there and be the biggest bully of them all.
Yeah.
Right? Where he doesn't respect any institutions, whether it's the Congress or the Supreme Court or any state, and their ability to do what they want, unless it's, you know, something that fits within his political ideology.
Wow. That is really scary, what you just said. And
yeah, because think about it. The Supreme Court can't enforce its own rules. When the Supreme Court did the busing cases in the 70s, I mean, the biggest fear was that, like, local states or the president would be like, fuck that. We're not going to follow this. We're not going to bus anybody. People are pissed, whatever. Fuck the Supreme Court. Right.
What happened.
Yeah, exactly. Which essentially happened, because then a few years later, the Supreme Court said, oh, you know what? We've already the busing worked. We're going to get rid of the busing, even though it didn't fucking work. Right. Because they never gave it a chance. Places like Boston went fucking berserk. Right.
Well, Chicago bent over backward. The school you went to was a creation of that's a whole other story of Chicago's reaction. Like, they created the Curies of the World in order to avoid having forced busing.
Right, right. And because then, places like Boston, that you know, guys were breaking heads and shit, right? So, yeah. And then the Supreme Court said, well, wow. A couple years later, they revisited the issue and very quickly got rid of busing. Because, and why? Not because they weren't right the first time when they ordered busing as a remedy, but because they realized they can't enforce shit. And they're afraid that their legitimacy is going to be undermined whenever people don't follow their rules. So, again, a president like Trump, who doesn't give a shit, the minute he doesn't give a shit about something that the Supreme Court doesn't want them to do, it undermines their legitimacy completely. So they should be in their own interest. They should be wanting not to give this guy another opportunity to do another January 6th.
No, what you're saying, and just to really bring it home, is Donald Trump right now is on the outside running for president, essentially asking Americans to make him their emperor. That's essentially what Donald Trump is at. He is above the law. He's argued that he's immune from any kind of prosecution once he's president. So if the American public responds to this by ratifying Donald Trump, by electing him as president, they're effectively electing an emperor, because he has told us.
Yeah.
He has told us definitively, I don't believe that I can be controlled by any law. So that's the decision that Americans have to make come November.
And so again, if Justice Barrett is so concerned about the political temperature all of a sudden, and I think she should be worried about that, because our argument, people from the opposite side of her political thinking, is that that's the kind of shit you should take into account, policy and where people lie or whatever when you're making decisions. You should be practical and rational and come out with a good outcome. She's like, oh, we just call balls and strikes, except for when I think there's going to be a fucking race war in this country, and maybe they're going to go to my house and hang me by the fucking, you know, with a noose, then I'll say the political temperature, we should let it simmer down.
Let it simmer down.
You know, but she should be, if she's taking the political temperature, then her decision should be like, no, let's agree with Colorado. That's right. This guy's a fucking insurrectionist. He undermines democracy. Why the fuck would we ever want to put him on there? If somebody from the Civil War who gave an oath to this country and then rebelled against it could be kept from being a congressman or a senator, why the fuck not would we want to keep somebody who incited the storming of the Capitol to be fucking president?
Yeah. And to your point, I just want to finish to clarify exactly the point you were making. So right now, Donald Trump is not the emperor. He's not the dictator. He needs to be victorious in November. An electoral college does it. Doesn't even need to get a majority, just electoral college victory. Mm-hmm. And so what you're saying is that this is the moment when the Supremes can prevent dictatorship by just saying no.
And you exerting their independence and exerting the fact that they are powerful as a third branch in this democratic institution of checks and balances. This is precisely the moment where they should be like, and these motherfuckers who are just calling balls and strikes even admit they once in a while have to take the political temperature and simmer it down. This is where they need to fucking man up or woman up and be like, yeah, that's right. This is what we're here for. This is what the founders, I'm an originalist, I'm a textualist. This is what the founders would have wanted. They would have wanted this branch to step up and be like, whoa, the fucking Congress clearly is giving this guy, you know, they're appeasing this guy. We're going to fucking check and balance this whole fucking thing. We're immune because we have our jobs secured. We have our salaries secured. This is the time where we're going to jump in and give a big fuck you to everyone else and set the thing right. But they're not. They're doing the opposite. Yeah. That's what's fucking killing me. Because this is if they are so concerned about what our founders wanted, our founders right now would be like, okay, this is why we wrote that fucking Article 3 court system here. It's you motherfuckers have the chance because everyone's gone berserk. You're the ones who put the last check on this and prevent this motherfucker from getting on and becoming the emperor, to undermine our whole constitution, to undermine everything that those founders fucking fought for. Yeah. If they believe so strongly in the founders and their enlightened theories of liberty and justice, and they enshrine this in this constitution, why the fuck would they not stand up and prevent a guy who fucking totally wants to rip that apart from taking the reins?
Yeah, man. Yep. I agree with you. And let me go back to Amy Coney Barrett, the comment she wrote about simmering down. She wrote that in that was a response to the rhetoric that the three Democratic or liberal justices their ruling. She didn't do that to the others. Do you follow what I'm saying? So now we're going to move into the difference between a dissent and a concurrence. and how it plays out with these various rulings, because it's very confusing, the games that the justices play. Ketanji Brown Jackson, Elaine Kagan, and Justice Sotomayor, they were critical, even though they voted with the six other justices to throw Colorado out and essentially allow Donald Trump to remain on the ballot. They were critical of one part of that ruling. And we'll get into the specifics of that one part of the ruling, in a little bit. But they were critical of the ruling that said that went beyond the issue of should he be allowed to be on the ballot. And they pointed out the hypocrisy of the judges overreaching in their decision. And they quoted previous judicial rulings by Roberts and the other judges to show they were being hypocrites. That's the part that Amy Coney Barrett criticized. She didn't criticize the allowing the fascist guy to be on the ballot while he's campaigning on being able to just ignore any judicial order. She was criticizing the other judges for pointing out the hypocrisy. I needed to point this out. All right. So explain to our listeners, Adolfo, how you can have a concurrence that is effectively a dissent. How can you have a concurrence that spends most of its time chastising the ruling that they're ultimately agreeing on? That sounds so chicken shit.
It is, because what often happens is you can also have what's called a hybrid. You could have a concurrence in part and a dissent in part. And they didn't do that here either. It's a concurring in the judgment. So when you concur, that means you agree with something. So you agree with basically the general outcome, right? We might have disagreed the reasons why we decided this way, but we agree with the outcome. That's what a concurrence generally is. A dissent is where, like, I don't agree with the outcome. I don't agree with the reasoning. And this is why, right? And Sotomayor, they basically changed the name of her decision into a concurring decision, even though, because she agrees that, you know, the Colorado doesn't have this right, but they totally disagree on everything else about the fucking decision. I think at best this is a concurrence and a dissent, but there was some type of political pressure within their structure of their nine justices to have supposedly this face of a 9-0 vote. But that's bullshit, right? Because they're in essence not voting 9-0. I don't know what kind of horse trading was going on, what kind of leverage they were trying to use to get, you know, there's speculation about maybe the dissent was being written so that they could leverage it so that perhaps it could be a very narrow decision, which it wasn't, because it overreached. They could have gone and said very narrow measures and said, like, okay, it does apply. Like I said, it does apply to presidents, it's self-enforcing, blah, 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 blah. Instead, they took the fucking other measure and they were like, no, Congress needs to act on this, and basically until they do, we're basically nullifying this part of the Constitution, right? They're basically saying that this doesn't, just there on the shelf, at least for presidents, right? It's there on the shelf and you can't really use it until somebody does something about it.
So why won't you just openly dissent? Why won't you just say, no, I can't sign on to this?
If we remember how people made such a big deal about Ruth Bader Ginsburg reading her dissent in the 2000 yes. election case, yes. basically as a fuck you to everyone else.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know why they couldn't have just dissented as a fuck you to Roberts and all of the other cocksuckers that are up there.
Well, I will give you the best spin. If I were a mainstream media person, this is what you would say. If you kick Donald Trump off the ballot, it will be viewed by MAGA as a partisan attack on Donald Trump. Okay. And it'll be attempt, like everything else that Donald Trump says, they don't want me to be the candidate. They don't, they want to take away your right. It's anti-democratic. Even though I will point this out again, there are a whole bunch of rules and regulations that are enforced all the time in every state of the union regarding who gets to be on the ballot or not. This is not something that just popped up today with Donald Trump.
They've said
Colorado, they have ruled one more time that Colorado doesn't have a right to do something that every state does all the time. It's a preposterous ruling in the first place. It's like completely contradicted by the world that exists. Okay.
And so, not only that, it's anti-democratic to knock off somebody who's anti-democratic.
Yeah. Okay. So in their effort to look nonpartisan, they are effectively weighing in a very partisan way. They are allowing Donald Trump to stay on the ballot, even though he is clearly violating the Constitution. His presence on the ballot, but so they're being partisan in the way, in an effort to be look nonpartisan.
This is as Malcolm X said. This is the rooster coming back. What was his big quote about the
chickens coming home to roost?
Yeah, the chickens coming home to roost, because this conservative Supreme Court has already maintained that hypocrisy, that they're just calling balls and strikes and they're not partisan. But the public doesn't buy that. And their opinion of the Supreme Court is that it's low, probably at its lowest point, because they know that there's a hypocrisy. They've now built themselves into to pretending that they're not partisan. And then comes along Donald Trump with a situation where he sets it up where you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If you vote for him to be knocked off the ballot, you got all these MAGA people telling you to fuck you. And if you keep him on the ballot, you lose, because you're fucking putting an anti-Democrat into the pathway to the presidency. So they got themselves to this point because they were playing with this hypocrisy. And now they have to figure out all sorts of weird ways of maintaining somehow this illusion that they're not partisan by doing partisan shit. So it leads to that kind of result where they're doing like these clearly partisan decision in order somehow to maintain the facade that they are not partisan. It's that crazy.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. All right. So let me ask you this, since we're all speculating, in your humble opinion, if they had upheld Colorado, I can't imagine a 9-0 vote. It would have been, let's say they got 5 justices to uphold Colorado and kick Trump off the ballot on the grounds that he's clearly violating the 14th Amendment. If they had done that, what do you think the impact would be? Like, what would the reaction of MAGA and the public as a whole be if suddenly Donald Trump was removed from the ballot in Colorado, and removed from the ballot in Illinois, and probably Maine, just to start with? What do you think the public reaction?
Well, that's the thing. If you're also one of these conservatives who's also being calculated, even though you're denying that you do that, what is the harm in just ruling in favor of Colorado when you know, in essence, it has no practical detrimental effect to Trump anyway? Because he's going to still run in the states that it matters. So to me, it's a win-win if you rule in favor of Colorado, because on the one hand, you make the right call and you say, this is exactly what happens, right? And bring attention to the fact that he's a fucking insurrectionist. But at the same time, MAGA can't really complain. They'll complain anyway, but they really can't complain, because the fact remains that the 3 states that will not come off the ballot, ooh, boo-hoo, right? It doesn't. MAGA would be like, "Oh, boo-hoo, Democrats, you tried, but you know,
yeah,
Trump is still going to be on the ballot in Mississippi.
Yeah,
still going to be on the ballot in good old Georgia. You know, so I mean, so to me, if you're doing like a fucking economic analysis and utility and all this other bullshit, whatever, if you're one of these law and economic motherfuckers or whatever, you're like, yeah, let's give them this decision because we come out with a win-win. On the one hand, we rule the way we're supposed to rule in favor of the Constitution, and and in favor of these states' rights and blah, blah, blah. And on the at the same time, we really didn't damage the guy. So no one can cause some upheaval that will you know, lead to fucking World War III or the second Civil War or whatever, you know?
Yeah. No, it, by the way, the more I talk to you about it, the more I think about it, it was really a radical ruling against state rights. That's totally been lost in this because it was done by the people who generally support state rights. This is the point you were making before. And I think about it. They have effectively said that states can't govern who gets on. They can't have rules and regulations governing who runs in their state on federal elections. That's what they've effectively said. So it's not just Ralph Nader here in Illinois. I remember when Kanye West, when the Republicans wanted to put Kanye West, remember that? The Kanye West party, the Republican attitude.
Oh my God.
That guy yeah. on the ballot. No, it was true in Michigan. They wanted to do it. I forget. The Democrats wouldn't be able to challenge that. In other words, they're just saying that states just, I don't know who. So who's in charge now? It like if the states can't regulate who goes on a ballot, then who's in charge?
And then also, kind of like I'm just thinking off the spot. But what about the opposite? Okay, so there's a rule in the Constitution that you can't run for president unless you're what is it, 35 years of age at yes. least, something like yes. that, right? Yeah. What if Illinois says, fuck it, we're gonna let a 34-year-old get on the fucking ballot. He'll be 35 in a couple years into his term.
Yeah,
who's gonna enforce? You know, like what the you know, it's like, I mean, the bottom line is that there has to be some kind of there has to be some kind of understanding that if there are these, whether they're state or federal rules of ballot access, they have to be abided by, and the medium that they're enforced by is through the state mechanisms, yeah. right? The state, because each state has to put people, they govern their own elections, and therefore the Supreme Court and the Congress are basically have to give this power to the states, to each yeah. of the states. They might give these rules, the ones we're talking about, the insurrectionists and the 35-year-old and all of that stuff, may not be. They don't come from the state law. They come from the federal law, but essentially they have to be enforced through the state mechanism, right? They're the ones that everyone, you know, they have to make sure that they're 35 years old, that they haven't done this, that they're not, you know, whatever. Every candidate. So it's up to the state to be the guardian of that access to the ballot, right?
Right. All right, let's get to the other dimension of the ruling, and this is the one that drew the opposition of the liberal judges, of the Democratic judges, of the progressive judges, whatever you want to talk about it, even though they did not dissent from the ruling itself. And that has to do with the notion that in the future, the legislative branch has to decide as to whether the presidential candidate or the president did constitutes violating the 14th Amendment, that it's the legislative branch, not the judicial branch, that must decide. And it has to be some kind of legislative act. Whoopi Goldberg, I got to give her credit for this, Whoopi Goldberg in The View, said that was essentially a prophylactic for Donald Trump. And by that, she meant that the next time he has a coup, the next time he does an insurrection, he will be further protected because the Supremes have said you can't come to us to judge whether this was an insurrection. It has to start with Congress. So in other words, it's like they totally anticipate that he's going to do this again.
Right.
Or set up the
rules for somebody like let's say he gets old and he dies or whatever. He sets up the rules for someone along in his vein, right? So, and that's, you know, that's the real troubling thing about this is that he's basically using, like, he's going to use his pardon power too. He's going to go in there and do all sorts of fucking calculated pardons for all his supporters. And then the next step will be he talks about how they weaponize the government against him, which is such bullshit. You want to know about weaponizing, wait till he gets in the presidency and he's going to weaponize that motherfucker big time, you know, using the IRS and using all sorts of the FBI and the CIA, all of these tools that the president has to wipe out his enemies. He's not going to give a shit. And like you said, that makes him emperor, right? At that point, right? He can go after anyone and everyone. And we're going to live in a fucking dystopian America, man. So this case is so important. Like, and now I'm thinking about it. I'm like, you know, again, this idea that if our founding fathers were here right now, they'd be turning over their fucking graves because they envisioned a system of checks and balances. And this is the, you know, how the kids now say you had one fucking job. You had one fucking job. This, the Supreme Court, they had one fucking job. Keep democracy alive. And they basically essentially gutted it right now.
Yeah. No, they chickened out. They chickened out. They didn't want to take a strong stand. They didn't want to aggravate MAGA. They didn't want to expose the split on their court. There's no way they would have gotten Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito to join them in a measure that would clearly enforce this provision of the 14th Amendment. First of all, you would have had opposition from Clarence Thomas on the issue of whether it was an insurrection. But because they didn't even confront that central issue, that cop out, then he didn't weigh in on that particular matter. It's a total. I rank this as one of the worst Supreme Court decisions of all time, and it has very frightening implications, in my humble opinion, because, again, we are facing a ratification come November. That, to me, is the central issue. Do we want to end democracy in our country and go to a fascist state? That's what's on the ballot.
And another tragedy of this is that it will be a minority of the country that will make that decision for us.
Yes.
You know, again, it'll be that fucking minority, that rural minority that they're talking about in the news, that's the most racist, homophobic, that is the most anti-democratic, that is the, you know, it's not even about their economic interests or anything. They don't give a fuck that they're poor. They don't give a fuck that their life is bullshit. They just give a fuck about somebody doing all these irrational things to others, right? Mm-hmm. Others. That they, you know, in America, basically, yeah, not white people.
I saw you sent me that. You sent me that Instagram.
Yeah.
I'd seen already. Joy Ann Reid ran it, and Joe Scarborough, the interview under Joe Scarborough's show, where these two authors were talking about white rural rage. Yeah, it was a frightening moment in this country. And it, like so many other things, Adolfo, it's swallowed up by all the other news that's coming out, you know. So it's almost like it's old news. And I'm screaming, wait a minute, hold on. You guys just gave Trump license to just be an insurrectionist, run for office, even though he's an insurrectionist. And number two, have another insurrection if he doesn't like the outcome of this election.
And the adding scarier things to it, like, you know, Donald Trump is now meeting with people like Elon Musk and stuff. Pretty soon he's going to invite Jeff Bezos and all the oligarchs who hold all the wealth in this country. And he's going to strike a bargain with them. And he's going to be like, you allow me to do this and it's going to go fine for you. We're going to be pro-business, blah, blah, blah. And I won't go after your wealth. I won't go like Putin does against all the oil oligarchs that got him, you know, that went against them. He like took all their fucking fortunes away. He's like, so long as you play ball, you don't have anything to worry about. Business will be as usual. Everything will go on. Don't worry about it. Any protests or whatever, I'll quell it. I'll call out the National Guard. I'll do whatever the fuck to do it. I'll call these hillbillies with their guns and shit, and they'll fucking come out and do it. You know? And so it's going to be business as usual because he's going to co-opt everybody. He's already co-opted the Supreme Court. Like you said, they're intimidated by him. So they have a choice. We could either fight against them and keep and prevent them from coming to power again, which is what I think should happen. Or what's happening is we're intimidated by him. So we're going to suck his dick so that when he's president, he doesn't harm us. Yeah. And we could just keep churning out business as usual. Look at McConnell, right? He already fucking endorsed his ass. Like, 2 minutes, you know, after he loses, Trump loses the election, he's like, oh, January 6th, that was horrible. And now, you know, he's over here like, oh, yeah, he's going to be my president.
Well, this is, we're getting it way ahead of ourselves, but this is one of the reasons that people said that you, many pundits said that you need, for America to take seriously the crimes of Donald Trump, you need a conviction. And I think Donald Trump subscribes to this notion too, which is why he's fighting so long to delay all of the various trials against him, because he notes that the public opinion polls show that the percentage of Americans who think that he committed serious crimes falls the further away we come from the crimes the day they were committed. And so guys like McConnell can just completely reverse himself. A lot of people, Kevin McCarthy did it before that. Now you're going to watch Nikki Haley is going to do it.
Oh, yeah. She'll be out there. She's going to want to be vice president.
Wow. Yeah, she'll never get it, but whatever. And so that's gets to the final issue for us to discuss today, immunity. And so one of the theories thrown out, I think I sent this to you by a writer for Slate, was the reason the reason that the liberal judges agreed to go on to not have a dissent and do a concurrence was because they were going to trade it for a Supreme Court decision on the issue of, is the president immune from prosecution for crimes, alleged crimes that he committed while he was president, which is the heart of Trump's defense in the prosecution for the January 6th, his role on January 6th. His argument is, you can't prosecute me because I was president at the time. And the appellate court in that decision said it was absurd, and no one is above the law, even the president. So the Supremes could have just said, that's it. We're not going to...
Right.
The appellate court decided. But no, they took the case.
And they slow rolled it, as they say, and when you reveal your poker cards very slowly to make, you know, to rub it in on the other guy, he slow rolled it in because they fast tracked the one case that they knew how they were going to keep him on the ballot, but they're going to slow roll this one because I'm guessing that they ultimately will say, no, you don't have this immunity power, but oh, hey, we kept it. We delayed it long enough that it doesn't even matter because you're not going to get tried for this shit. The election's going to happen and whoop, you're going to be president anyway.
I don't know if they'll do it. You know what? I don't know. I don't know if they'll say he doesn't have. I don't know if they'll rule that way. I think at least two judges will say he has immunity. I think that Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito will say he has immunity.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. Under Bush, remember, under Bush too, I mean, that administration moved successfully to expand the powers of the presidency through war, you know? And so there, remember, Cheney's whole thing, his whole ideology was that the president should have a lot more power and shouldn't be restrained by, you know, the courts or Congress. And so if they're going along, and a lot of these people served under that presidency, right, as lawyers and all sorts of levels of stuff. So it is very possible that you're right, that they could do that.
I'm still hoping he could run for office, even though he's an insurrectionist.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
They've already, and they did it 9-0. So, I mean, it's okay. If they're cutting a deal, Adolfo, if the liberals say, all right, we'll go with you in your absurd ruling that an insurrectionist can run even though he's violating the Constitution. We'll join you in that because it's too chaotic to kick an insurrectionist off. All right? Uh-huh. You could make an equally compelling chaotic argument that it's too chaotic to prosecute a president who is so fervently worshipped by MAGA. They're going to get mad if you put him in jail.
Right.
You know, is if you prosecute, so you could make the chaotic argument.
Yeah, you could rationalize any kind of anything. Situation.
So I'm not convinced. I thought they were swapping. I bought this kid's, the guy I wrote the article for. All right, they're swapping their 9-0 vote for the immunity case. But now I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm not confident that this court will rule against Trump on the issue of whether he can be prosecuted for crimes.
Well, the only reason why I think maybe they will ultimately decide against Trump in that case is because if they already knew that they were going to vote and grant him this, you know, vast immunity, they would have fast-tracked that one too. Because they have nothing. I mean, if they already know how they're going to rule, what's in it for them delaying it, right? Other than so, but if you're delaying it just to delay the trial, because ultimately you are going to rule against them, because by delaying it, remember, he'll never get tried. If he gets elected, that gets postponed. for 4 years. You can't move on it. You can't. While he's a city president, he can't be tied with, you know, giving testimony in court and, you know, being found guilty of stuff.
Well, that'll require another ruling. Can he be tried?
Right. I mean, the general wisdom has been that you. I mean, I know what you're saying, but the general wisdom has been like that. You can't. You have to just kind of freeze it, right? And then wait till he's out of office.
I feel that would require judicial ruling, and I have no doubt he would get it. We're so far ahead of ourselves. But follow me, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not following this one. So what Adolfo is saying is effectively that the Supremes will rule that a president can be prosecuted for alleged crimes that he committed while president. But their decision will be so late that the actual trial on the crimes of Donald Trump will not take place until either after the election or right before the election. In which case, if he is victorious electorally in November, he can immediately halt that those trials by taking control of the Justice Department and ordering them to drop the cases, or pardoning himself immediately so that he can't be punished, or just ignore the verdicts because he's the president of the United States. This gets to your point, like, right. Ignore it. Effectively, you would have saved him from the consequences of his action by delaying it. That's the point.
Without granting him the immunity, but in fact giving him immunity,
yeah.
Basically.
In fact, yeah, effectively giving him immunity. I mean, to play this out, prosecutors would appeal that. So if Donald Trump...
And then somewhere deep in his first term, barely the Supreme Court will be getting that case, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like it basically... Why, you know, and that will be a constitutional crisis, right?
Yeah,
so,
I'll give you a constitutional crisis. Let's say, and we'll get back to state rights. We'll close it here. He's up. It's a state matter in Georgia. Fonnie Willis is prosecuting him for trying to steal the election. They got a lot of good evidence on that one, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm.
Witnesses. They have witnesses.
Yeah, they got Donnie Trump on tape going, get rid of those votes. Okay. Just imagine if that was Michael Madigan on tape. So if he's convicted in Georgia, he's the president of the United States, Georgia will be demanding that the president turn himself over to Georgia authorities.
Right, it's a state crime, not a federal crime, right? Yeah,
and he'll go, no, not going.
Exactly. Right. And then how are you going to enforce it? Right?
How are you going to enforce it with the Supremes hiding in a corner going, scared?
Exactly.
You know?
So, yeah, he'll be like, yeah, fuck you, sue me. Fuck you, pay me, right? Like in Goodfellas, fuck you, pay me, right? You know?
Good.
Yeah, so exactly. And you know, and the thing is, he can't pardon himself for that because it's a state crime.
Yeah,
right. Like homicide or any of the other state crimes, although there's probably a federal homicide rule somewhere, but yeah, I mean, so he would have to go to prison. But is he gonna report to prison?
No, he will never. Now that I'm thinking through it, and I don't,
he'll be like, I'll just stay out of Georgia. Yeah. I just won't go into the state of Georgia anymore.
Yeah. Actually, I could see him going in. Trump.
Like, I'm going to have me a Chick-fil-A in Georgia tomorrow. I'm going to go.
Yeah, fly in and fly out before they can nab him. Anyway, that's the decision you have, America. The Supreme Court wimped out on this matter. And with a preposterous ruling that saying states don't have the right to do something that states have been doing for years and years and years, which is really preposterous ruling when you think about it, Adolfo. Right. And that it's too chaotic to try to prevent an insurrectionist from running again. It's too chaotic and damaging. It's like a bank that's too big to fail. Donald Trump as a political force is too big to regulate. So we have to let him do whatever he wants. That's essentially what they said.
Yeah, and the thing is, and I think even that is propaganda, that he's too big to fail. Because again, it's a minority, a rabid minority, mind you, but it's a rabid minority that backs him up.
Yeah.
Fuck that minority, man. Fuck that. Let them try to fucking, do a civil war and shit. Let the fucking governor of Texas try to secede. It's all talk. because they know that shit wouldn't. But if Trump gets elected, now that's a whole different fucking story, right?
Whole different thing. Absolutely. All right, Adolfo, we'll save for another time discussion of your beloved White Sox, which are becoming less and less beloved with each passing day for you.
Oh, my goodness.
It's unbelievable. Joining forces with the Bears. That is just one of the funniest things in the world. And the developer acting like, what a great thing, Chicago. These two great sports teams. It took the sports writer Morrissey to point out, these guys suck, okay? They're terrible teams. Dude, the White Sox are so bad.
But the balls on Reinsdorf are already, I mean, they're humongous. They must barely fit in his house because when he talks openly about, one, having no incentive to win, but that was bad enough. But two, saying like, well, you know, they're thinking like 2/3 public money, 1/3 White Sox money. But we're thinking more like 3/3 public money, no thirds White Sox money. I'm like, this dude's balls must be fucking the size of King Kong's balls or something. Because,
it works. I mean, it works. You know, and now like, the Bears are like, what about us? Because their money. And so they're going to have to figure it out. Oh, my Lord. And then they're going to have to convince the public. That'll be my favorite part of it, with the propaganda that they disseminate to convince the public that the fleecing of the public is actually good for the public.
Oh, my goodness.
It'll be sort of like the Supreme Court saying that it's good for society to allow the insurrectionists to run because it would be too scary and chaotic to try to stop the insurrectionists. He doesn't do another insurrection.
So they're trading a future insurrection for a future dictator is basically what they're telling you.
That
you
is correct. They're leaving it to the voters to determine whether the voters want to head into a different direction and move away from a constitutional democracy. If the voters want to, then they have the right.
They're leaving it to a minority of Americans to decide that.
You're right. You're absolutely
right. Because California alone could fucking outvote those motherfuckers, you know?
You're right.
Jesus, right? I mean, New York and California right there could decide the whole fucking thing if it was popular, man.
And if you want a sense of how scary this possibly could be, I'll close by just recommending a movie that I already recommended, Adolfo, and I hope he gets a chance to see it. It's called They Shot the Piano Player. It's about the brilliant Brazilian samba jazz player, Tenorio, who was rounded up in Argentina back in 1976, disappeared, military dictatorship. It's I won't give any more the details, but the movie is a documentary about his life and his disappearance, and it's just absolutely fascinating. It's a little scary if you draw the obvious parallel, Adolfo, but I urge everybody to see it. Maybe it'll bring home a sense of urgency for this upcoming election. They Shot the Piano Player. And that's your assignment to watch, Adolfo. Adolfo Mondragon, we talk politics.
Yeah, people should read, remember 1984, George Orwell? Was it Orwell? Yeah, Orwell,
yeah,
right?
George Orwell, yeah.
Yeah, people should read how easily these things start out good and then become fucking nightmares for everyone, even the people who supported in the beginning.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Adolfo Mondragon is a brilliant student of music. People don't know that, but the guy knows his music inside and out. I don't know if you're that into Brazilian jazz, but man, from that aspect alone, you should watch this movie. All right, Adolfo, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you.
You're the man. Also, I want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job. Hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, Adolfo.
And as I always say, remember, you can catch previous Ben Jarofsky shows, get Benny J bonus interviews, read columns from Ben Jarofsky, and so much more, all at ChicagoReader.com. You can follow Ben on Instagram, at Benny J Show. Make sure to like those reels, people. Tell your friends, and like, subscribe, and follow the Ben Jarofsky Show on all your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.